Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Bit later than usual, but for very good reason. It's the day after the midterm elections. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And I'm guessing by this point, if you're listening to this, you know that it was a very good night for Republicans. And therefore, we have three good martinis today. The biggest one, of course, that the Republicans will control the U.S. Senate in the next Congress. The only question is how many seats they will control. We know at this point that it's at least 52. And there seems to be good odds that it could be as high as 54. Andrew, just to go through the narrative of how this played out last night, the second the polls closed in Kentucky, they called it for Mitch McConnell. And at that point, you knew things were probably heading in the right direction. Not long after that, it was too close to call in Virginia. And as it turns out, it's still too close to call in Virginia, although Mark Warner will probably hang on. That was a shocker. Tom Cotton not only was called when the polls closed in Arkansas, but he's held Mark Pryor under 40% here. Then there was the West Virginia, South Dakota, Montana seats we knew Republicans would pick up. Cory Gardner and Joni Ernst not going that late into the evening. David Perdue not needing a runoff. Tom Tillis fends off Kay Hagan, which none of us on the Three Martini Lunch predicted. And we still could get more. So as the night went on, things just got better and better.
Yeah, and it was getting so good to a point for Republicans that as we were sort of waiting for them to tally up Colorado and Iowa, and it looked like Republicans were going to take control of the Senate, I had actually kind of put it out of my mind that Louisiana and North Carolina were still being tallied up as well. And so it looked like we were going to take the Senate before even North Carolina and Louisiana had been counted. And that just sort of shows that the wave that I guess was coming upon us at the time, that it was everything was falling the right way for Republicans. And it's not just the seats that Republicans picked up. Like you mentioned in Arkansas, it's the margin in which they won. I mean, you actually, in this data-driven journalism world, you kind of have to ask, why did we think so many of these races were competitive? I tallied up in Arkansas, where, like you said, Pryor got less than 40% of the vote. Tom Cotton won by 16 points. Races that were closer than Arkansas included Minnesota, it included Oregon, it included New Jersey, it included New Mexico. Delaware was a closer race than Arkansas was. If you can name me who the Republican challenger was in Delaware, I'll be very impressed.
I can't.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like you said, in Georgia, David Perdue avoided the runoff. Everyone was nervous about that. Cory Gardner fared pretty well. I mean, he was within his margins. But Joni Ernst won by about 10 points. So a sign of how good a night it was for Republicans, again, wasn't just the seats that they won. I think we all knew these seats were in play, but was the impressive margin that they won them in. I mean, even Kansas, Pat Roberts won by 10 points.
That was a big one, too, because that's one we kind of thought we were going to lose, really, of the three that Democrats had targeted. That was the one that Roberts seemed that he couldn't get over the top in the polls, but he won by 10 points and probably carried Sam Brown back across the finish line with him. Obviously, Kansas tilts red, but the fact that we didn't have to make that one up and then pick up others to get the majority in the Senate for the next Congress, that was a huge, huge deal. And really, Tillis was the only nail-biter of the night that Republicans won. Scott Brown obviously put up a good fight in New Hampshire, didn't get there. We'll see what happens in Alaska and what happens in Louisiana runoff, but just an easier-than-expected win in a lot of those races. And so a lot of expectations now for the Republicans as well. On to the second good martini of the day. Let's look at the governors and House races. There were a lot of Republican governorships on the ballot, obviously, because they did so well in 2010. Some of the biggest targets were Scott Walker in Wisconsin. He won re-election better than he beat the recall by. Rick Scott held off Charlie Crist in Florida. That was unexpected. Rick Snyder, after pushing right to work in Michigan, hangs on there. And then just when you thought the wave couldn't get much bigger, Republicans win the governorships in Illinois, Maryland, and Massachusetts, of all places. And as of right now, with probably about 16 or so House races left, to be called, the Republicans are plus 14 and looking at perhaps their biggest majority since right after World War II.
Yeah, and again, I don't mean to poo-poo the victories in the Senate, but I think it's the governor's races and the House races. Again, the gains there that really show how big of a night and this was for the Republicans. They won Wisconsin. They won states like Arkansas that we knew they would win. But they were able to unseat Pat Quinn, who was an unpopular governor in Illinois. But Quinn had managed to keep it close. But the Republican there, Rauner, ended up fending him off. And then once Maryland, Massachusetts looked like they were going Republican, I didn't even believe the initial results I heard from it. You kind of had to do double takes. It just shows sort of a rejection of Democrats in those states. If you look at Maryland, I think if there was any chance of there being one, a Martin O'Malley presidential run is kind of dead in the water. It was a pretty significant victory there, too, by Republican Larry Hogan. He won by about 9 points, I think it was. I think when you look beyond the Senate, where, again, there weren't surprises per se. All the seats that were won there, people were expecting to win. Maybe by not as much as we did, but they were expecting to win it. But it's elsewhere. So when you look at these governor's races, there were seats in the House that people didn't even think were really in play that suddenly Republicans were competitive in, if not winning. Bruce Braley in Iowa, Republicans picked up his old House seat, for example.
Yes.
They were able to knock off a bunch of these longtime red district, I guess, Democrats like John Barrow in Georgia, Nick Rahal in West Virginia, while also picking up seats in Nevada. We picked up a Maine House seat as well. So the Senate, very impressive wins by Republicans there. But just to sort of get a grasp of how big the night was, you know, you have to look at the other races that Republicans were able to pull off.
Yeah, and two significant potentially people coming to Washington. Mia Love wins in Utah. She'll be definitely a major person you'll see a lot of as soon as she comes to Washington. And Elise Stefanik up in New York 21, the youngest woman ever elected to the House of Representatives, won overwhelmingly in a pickup seat for the Republicans. And Andrew, I want to give you credit because you saw this Pat Quinn thing coming in Illinois. Granted, he was already very unpopular, but you're the one that found the video of him getting no response when he was introduced by the Little League champion team at the ballpark there, and everybody's like, give it up for Pat Quinn, and nobody clapped. And I think that was the telltale sign. We've got our soccer moms, our security moms, and I think Little League moms might be the next bellwether here.
Yeah, if you can't even get gratuitous applause at a Little League rally, I think you know you're in trouble, especially the team was from a Democratic stronghold in Chicago. So, yeah, that should have been the bellwether. You know,
exactly
that,
right.
The Jackie Robinson West League Little League team wasn't on his side.
Yeah, if you can't carry that vote, you got problems. All right, on to the next good martini now, and we'll hear from the president later this afternoon at some point. He's got a press conference scheduled. Last time, 2010, he called it a shellacking. I remember in 2006, George W. Bush called it a thumping. So we'll find out what adjective or gerund is going to be used this time around. But the fun thing for conservatives now is that the president really didn't get involved in that many races. He got involved in the Illinois governor's race and the Maryland governor's race, and that's where people started walking out. He stumped for Mary Burke in Wisconsin. People walked out there. And he stumped for the Democrats in Michigan, and that didn't work out so well. He cut a robocall at the last second for Kay Hagan that clearly didn't pan out. And, of course, he's the one who told black audiences on radio through the Al Sharpton show and other places that, hey, these people, you know, they're distancing themselves from me in the larger campaign, but they're with me when it matters. So the president is saying this isn't a reflection on the next 2 years, but it's hard to see how it's not.
Yeah, and there are also little moments. For example, he called into an Atlanta radio station and said, you know, Michelle Nunn will be on or we need Michelle Nunn in the Senate. Obviously, that didn't go their way. They didn't even make it to a runoff. The Democrats didn't. There was that moment yesterday where Joe Biden said, independent Greg Orman will be with us if he comes to the Senate. Obviously, that didn't end up going their way either. He lost by 10 points. The star power of President Obama and I guess Joe Biden didn't seem to have much of an impact. And everyone seemed to know that. That's why people were running away from them. That's why a lot of these Democratic candidates wouldn't say they voted for him. It'll be interesting to see what comes next. Like you said, he has a press conference later today. He's also meeting with the congressional leaders, McConnell, Reid, Boehner, and Pelosi. And we'll see what these next 2 years look like with a Republican-controlled Congress.
Andrew, exit question. We've obviously seen the president react to a midterm loss in 2010 that tightened up the Senate and gave control of the House to Republicans. And at that point, there wasn't a lot of olive branching, to coin a phrase, but now that he's lost both chambers, do you expect him to get the starch up in his collar and just try to do more executive-wise, or do you think he'll at least, on the surface, act like he wants to make a deal?
The biggest executive action that we see coming down the pipeline is on immigration,
right.
And early reports seem to say that they're not going to change on that. He wants to go full steam ahead. Things can change in an instant. The people are still getting over what happened last night. I know I am. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what comes to the table in these next few weeks and months. But I wouldn't be surprised if he just sort of hunkers down and decides, I have the last 2 years of my presidency. I'm going to do what I can and do what I want. Sort of with the mentality that he's had all along, is these Republicans are impossible to deal with. They're not going to get along with me. I can't work with them, and just kind of move forward with his agenda. Now, it's a lot harder with a Republican-controlled Congress, but I would probably lean towards him sort of keep going at it as he's been going at it.
Yeah, I think that would be the expectation of most folks. And it'll be fun to watch with a lot more Republican leverage, obviously, come January. Andrew, get some more rest, and we'll talk to you later. Thanks for filling in for Jim.
No problem. I want to say one more thing, though.
Sure.
Now that we have Cory Gardner in the Senate, be ready for, you know, weirding weather and all these other things that Mark Udall warned of. So this is the first day of the Gardner era.
That'll be fun. Andrew, yeah, looking forward to it. Have a great day.
Take it easy.
Andrew Johnson of National Review, and for Jim Garrity. Jim will be back on Thursday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us, and join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.